Picture this, if you will. You're a primary care physician seeing a 44-year-old female for her annual physical. She tells you, "I haven't been myself lately. I've never found my job that demanding before, but lately, when I come home from work, I'm so exhausted that all I want to do is go to sleep. I've wondered if it might be menopause, but my periods are still regular." You review the vitals and measurements your nurse obtained, and you see that she's lost about 20 pounds in the last year. She confirms that she hasn't been eating much because her stomach hurts, and she's nauseated all the time. On physical exam, you see that her body habitus does look much thinner than before, and then you notice an odd darkening in her mouth and gums. What pathology does her clinical presentation suggest? And how would you establish a definitive diagnosis? And welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Arjun Iyer, bringing topics from endocrinology from our bricks to your ears. After completing this section, you'll be able to 1. Define adrenal insufficiency and distinguish between primary and secondary types. 2. Describe the clinical features of adrenal insufficiency. 3. List the most common causes of adrenal insufficiency. 4. Explain how to diagnose adrenal insufficiency. And 5. Outline the treatment of adrenal insufficiency. Part 1. What is adrenal insufficiency? Adrenal insufficiency is a condition when a person's adrenal glands don't produce enough cortisol and other key steroid hormones. And this can lead to a variety of systemic effects, or even death, since a key role of cortisol and the mineralocorticoids is to maintain blood pressure. Additionally, the homeostasis of such critical molecules as glucose and potassium are also dependent on adrenal steroids, and disruption of their regulation can be fatal. Adrenal insufficiency has a number of causes that we'll get to shortly, but one important thing to remember is that it's particularly common in acutely ill patients. It's estimated that 20 to 50% of patients in the intensive care unit have adrenal insufficiency to some degree, as do as many as 75% of those in septic shock. Like many endocrine disorders, adrenal insufficiency can be classified as primary or secondary. If the adrenal gland is primarily regulated by ACTH secreted by the pituitary, then how would you define primary and secondary adrenal insufficiency? Well, primary AI occurs when the problem is impairment of the adrenal glands themselves, and is often referred to as Addison's disease when it's chronic. And secondary AI is caused by a disordered pituitary gland that can't secrete sufficient ACTH. But another important distinction is acute versus chronic adrenal insufficiency. Acute AI, also referred to as an adrenal crisis, occurs when chronically limited synthesis of cortisol becomes dramatically more insufficient in the presence of an acute physiologic stressor, like an infection. From a physiologic perspective, adrenal insufficiency is a bit complicated, since multiple hormones are involved with multiple different regulatory pathways. But first and most importantly is cortisol. Cortisol is important in maintaining blood pressure, keeping the glucose high enough during times of physiologic stress when you need more fuel to burn, and shifting metabolism from anabolic to catabolic. Cortisol production, and even hyperplasia of the adrenal gland, are controlled by the anterior pituitary via adrenocorticotropic hormone, or ACTH, which itself is regulated by hypothalamic CRH, or corticotropin-releasing hormone. And as is common in endocrinology, cortisol feeds back to suppress production of CRH and ACTH when the levels start to get too high, ensuring homeostasis. Important point to mention here. Pharmacologic glucocorticoids like prednisone will also suppress CRH and ACTH release, just like cortisol. Maybe obvious to some of you, but hold on to that information. It's an important factor in a lot of cases of adrenal insufficiency. The hypothalamic pituitary axis most directly regulates cortisol, but ACTH also has some effect on increasing the adrenal secretion of the mineralocorticoids, such as aldosterone. These hormones primarily help maintain blood pressure by increasing intravascular volume and increase the excretion of potassium in response to hyperkalemia. While the final step in aldosterone synthesis is regulated by the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, ACTH causes hyperplasia of all parts of the adrenal gland and upregulates the common pathway by which all adrenal steroids are synthesized from cholesterol. By that mechanism, ACTH increases the synthesis of weak androgens, such as androstenedione, but these have limited androgenic effects and are mostly regulated by FSH and LH from the anterior pituitary gland. For this reason, we primarily focus on the negative effects of low cortisol secretion. But just remember that adrenal insufficiency can also reduce the secretion of the other adrenal steroids. Part 2. How does adrenal insufficiency present? The presentation of adrenal insufficiency can range from mild in the chronic form to the life-threatening adrenal crisis. And the symptoms depend on how much adrenal function is lost. Like I said before, most of the important effects of adrenal insufficiency result from a lack of cortisol, but there are also important effects from low mineralic corticoids and elevated ACTH. First, let's talk about the most common cause of adrenal insufficiency, and that's Addison's disease. Addison's disease is basically the eponym for chronic primary adrenal insufficiency, because back in the day, you were basically nobody as a physician unless you slapped your name on something. It often presents very gradually with nonspecific complaints like weakness, fatigue, depressed mood, weight loss, nausea, and muscle aches that result from the cortisol deficiency. Not only are these not particularly intuitive based on cortisol's physiology, because they're so nonspecific, they're not particularly helpful in narrowing down the differential diagnosis. Slightly more specific is the presence of orthostatic presyncope, where you feel like you're about to pass out when you go from lying down to sitting up, or from sitting to standing. And this one makes a little bit more sense physiologically. Not only does cortisol potentiate vasoconstriction by the sympathetic nervous system, remember that aldosterone also supports blood pressure by increasing the fluid volume. So patients with Addison's disease have these loose, floppy blood vessels that aren't full of enough blood, causing their blood pressure to drop, especially when they change posture. Because of the aldosterone deficiency, these patients often have mild hyperkalemia and hyponatremia. But the most specific finding of Addison's disease is hyperpigmentation. It signifies the presence of increased ACTH levels that attempt to compensate for the low adrenal cortisol production. Remember that ACTH is produced in the pituitary from the precursor molecule POMC, which also produces melanocyte-stimulating hormone. Part of the reason hyperpigmentation is quite a specific finding to Addison's disease is that it doesn't occur in other forms of adrenal insufficiency. Now, based on your knowledge of endocrine physiology, why would hyperpigmentation occur with primary, but not secondary, adrenal insufficiency? Since secondary adrenal insufficiency is caused by low pituitary secretion of ACTH, there will be low rather than high levels of MSH as well. Other than hyperpigmentation, many of the same symptoms of Addison's disease are also present in secondary adrenal insufficiency. Orthostatic presyncope can still occur, but it's less common since it's mainly the loss of cortisol's potentiation of vasoconstriction that drives it. Remember that since the adrenal gland is functioning properly, it can still make aldosterone when stimulated by the renin-angiotensin system, so the fluid volume should be more or less adequate. For this reason, you don't typically see hyponatremia and hyperkalemia in patients with secondary adrenal insufficiency either. Now, let's talk about the bad news bears scenario, the adrenal crisis. In adrenal crisis, the familiar symptoms of chronic adrenal insufficiency become acutely worse. Remind me what they are again? Weakness, fatigue, depressed mood, weight loss, nausea, and muscle aches. Just gotta memorize those. In addition, hyponatremia is found in the majority of patients in adrenal crisis, both because of aldosterone, but also because the decreased cortisol disinhibits ADH secretion. But the two potentially lethal consequences are hypotension and hypoglycemia. The mechanism by which hypotension occurs is the same mechanism behind orthostatic presyncope in chronic adrenal insufficiency. Hypoglycemia doesn't tend to occur in chronic adrenal insufficiency, but the physiology for why it occurs in adrenal crisis is pretty logical. Cortisol is critical in maintaining the serum glucose, and in excess is a notoriously diabetogenic hormone. In adrenal crisis, the lack of cortisol causes failure to maintain adequate blood glucose in times of physiologic stress, when the metabolic needs are most high. The resulting hypoglycemia can cause dizziness, loss of consciousness, seizures, and even death if severe. An important point to remember is that ICU patients are especially at risk for adrenal insufficiency. This occurs for a number of reasons, one of which is that the long-term use of steroids leads to adrenal suppression by negative feedback. Alright, pop quiz time, gang. What are common symptoms due to low cortisol? Common symptoms include weakness, fatigue, weight loss, hypoglycemia, and orthostatic hypotension. Part 3. What causes adrenal insufficiency? Like I mentioned earlier, adrenal insufficiency can be divided into either primary or secondary, or acute and chronic. Some of this first part will be reviewed, but the most common cause overall is the abrupt withdrawal of prescribed glucocorticoid drugs. To review, What is the common name for chronic primary adrenal insufficiency? Addison's disease, right. In Addison's disease, the adrenal gland can't produce the adrenal hormones cortisol and, to a lesser extent, aldosterone, despite normal ACTH stimulation. And it has several causes. First, it can be caused by autoimmune destruction of the adrenal glands by both cell-mediated immunity and autoantibodies. Like a lot of autoimmune diseases, it occurs mostly in females and may be associated with other autoimmune diseases. You often see high eosinophil counts in patients with Addison's disease, and actually, Addison's disease is the endocrine abnormality most commonly associated with eosinophilia. Second, infection of the adrenal glands can cause chronic adrenal insufficiency as well. It's not common, but it can be caused by HIV, tuberculosis, or histoplasmosis. Probably the most infamous infectious cause of adrenal insufficiency is Waterhouse-Friderichsen syndrome, which is a massive hemorrhage of the adrenal glands. It occurs in septic patients, but most commonly in patients with bacteremia secondary to Neisseria meningitidis. But this generally causes acute adrenal crisis, rather than Addison's disease. Finally, drugs that inhibit adrenal steroid synthesis include the antifungals ketoconazole and fluconazole, the anti-tuberculosis drug rifampin, the antiparasitic Suramin, and the seizure drugs phenytoin and phenobarbital. And depending on which enzymes of steroid synthesis are inhibited, you may see a deficiency in cortisol, aldosterone, androgens, or a combination of the three. Just a review before we move on. What are the three general categories of cause of primary adrenal insufficiency? The three categories of primary adrenal insufficiency are autoimmune destruction, infection, and pharmacologic inhibition of steroid synthesis. Now let's move on to secondary adrenal insufficiency. The term secondary refers to the fact that the problem occurs one step up the regulatory pathway of hormone production. In the case of adrenal insufficiency, secondary implies that it's caused by decreased release of ACTH by the anterior pituitary. And this is actually functionally important, because ACTH regulates cortisol more directly than the other adrenal steroids. So features of hypoaldosteronism, like hyperkalemia, are generally not seen, and hyponatremia and orthostatic hypotension are present to a lesser extent, since the adrenal gland actually does still function well enough to be regulated by the renin-angiotensin system. There are two main causes of adrenal insufficiency. The first cause is pituitary insufficiency, which is the generic term given to the deficiency of one or more pituitary hormones. It's not usually caused by pathology that specifically targets corticotrophs, but rather more generalized insults to the brain, like trauma, pituitary tumors, and brain surgery. One condition that causes very specific damage to the pituitary is Sheehan syndrome, which is pituitary necrosis from ischemia that follows a postpartum hemorrhage. The second most important cause of secondary adrenal insufficiency is glucocorticoid withdrawal, and this is actually the most common etiology of adrenal insufficiency overall. When you give a patient high doses of drugs that act like cortisol, for example, prednisone or dexamethasone, for a long period of time, the feedback suppression built into the hypothalamic pituitary axis causes downregulation of ACTH production. Now, glucocorticoids are used for a lot of diseases, often for long periods of time. And if you abruptly stop giving someone glucocorticoids, the pituitary often doesn't have time to respond immediately and continues to produce low ACTH, resulting in adrenal insufficiency. For this reason, patients who have used glucocorticoid drugs for a few weeks should always be instructed to gradually taper off the drug in order to avoid an adrenal crisis. Part 4. How do we diagnose adrenal insufficiency? Diagnosis of adrenal insufficiency occurs in two steps. First, definitively establish that a patient has low cortisol levels. Second, determine the source of the problem. The former is done by measuring a morning serum cortisol concentration. Why in the morning, you might ask? Well, it's not just because endocrinologists are high maintenance. Cortisol levels vary throughout the day, but are generally highest in the morning. So if you think about it, measuring cortisol level when it should be at its highest gives the patient the best chance for a normal cortisol level. If even in the morning, the patient's cortisol level is below the normal range, it strongly suggests adrenal insufficiency. To determine the source of the problem, it's first helpful to distinguish between primary and secondary adrenal insufficiency, and these categories are roughly established by using plasma ACTH concentrations and the ACTH stimulation test. In the ACTH stimulation test, cosentropin, an ACTH analog, is administered, and the cortisol level is checked before and after the ACTH test. A twofold increase in cortisol is normal, while an increase of less than 25% strongly suggests that the adrenals themselves aren't working properly. Primary adrenal insufficiency is presumed if the basal ACTH levels are high and the ACTH stimulation test produces a negligible increase in cortisol levels, namely less than 25%. In patients suspected of having primary adrenal insufficiency, perform a dedicated CT of the adrenals with contrast to look for signs of atrophy, hemorrhage, or infection. Secondary adrenal insufficiency is presumed if the basal ACTH level is low, but interestingly enough, the ACTH stimulation test will not be reliably normal. If there's been long-term low ACTH secretion, the adrenal gland can atrophy and may not respond to ACTH immediately. On the other hand, if ACTH secretion has dropped acutely, restoring the levels of ACTH should cause the adrenal gland to respond briskly to ACTH stimulation. Often, you can actually see a 10 to 15-fold increase in cortisol, rather than the normal 2x increase. In these patients, perform a dedicated MRI of the pituitary to determine structural causes of pituitary insufficiency, assuming, of course, there's no clear history of steroid withdrawal that would explain the endocrine disorder. Pop quiz time. Describe how ACTH stimulation tests are used to distinguish primary from secondary adrenal insufficiency. If the cortisol increases by less than 25% in response to ACTH stimulation, it's a pretty good indication that the patient has primary adrenal insufficiency. Note that there's no reliable diagnostic cutoff value for secondary adrenal insufficiency, since the response to ACTH often depends on how chronic the adrenal insufficiency is. Now, additional tests can be ordered to identify specific causes of primary and secondary adrenal insufficiency, like the PCR for HIV and blood cultures for tuberculosis or fungal infections, and that all kind of depends on the patient's presentation and other risk factors. Patients with secondary adrenal insufficiency should be tested for other hormone deficiencies, like prolactin, IGF-1, which is used as a substitute for growth hormone assessment, and thyroid-stimulating hormone. In clinical practice, though, the hardest part is actually thinking to test for adrenal insufficiency. Because, to be fair, the symptoms of adrenal insufficiency are often vague. Is a patient fatigued and not eating enough because they're depressed? Or are the fatigue, appetite loss, and depression all caused by low cortisol? It just highlights the importance of keeping your differential diagnosis broad until you have reasons to rule in or rule out a diagnosis. Part 5. How do we treat and prevent adrenal insufficiency? The mainstay of treatment for adrenal insufficiency is actually pretty simple. Simply substitute the lack of endogenous cortisol production with pharmacologic glucocorticoids like dexamethasone, prednisone, or prednisolone. The catch is that because the body produces more cortisol to coordinate the response to physiologic stressors, the dose of glucocorticoids must be increased during times of physiologic stress. This includes events like trauma, surgery, infection, or other severe illnesses. Failure to increase the dose can trigger an adrenal crisis in patients, known as an Addisonian crisis in patients with Addison's disease. For that reason, any sign of infection like fever should prompt a call to the patient's endocrinologist or primary care physician so that the dose of glucocorticoids can be adjusted. While glucocorticoids do have some effect on the mineralocorticoid receptors, patients with significant signs of aldosterone deficiency, like hyperkalemia or hyponatremia, can also be given fludrocortisone, a synthetic mineralocorticoid that acts just like aldosterone. In severe acute adrenal insufficiency or an adrenal crisis, focus on resuscitation of the life threats first. IV boluses of normal saline will address the hypotension or shock that's often accompanied by hypovolemia. Always check a blood glucose, and if it's low, immediately administer IV dextrose. Finally, glucocorticoids are often given IV in these patients rather than by mouth. And lastly, since a lot of adrenal insufficiency is iatrogenic, it's important to talk about how to prevent it as well as treat it. To prevent adrenal insufficiency due to glucocorticoid withdrawal, patients using high-dose glucocorticoid drugs for a long period of time should undergo a drug taper at the end of their treatment. The schedule should be carefully written out, and the patient should be coached on how to follow it precisely. Let's try one more question before wrapping up. How do signs of infection affect the treatment of patients with chronic adrenal insufficiency? The doses of oral glucocorticoids need to be increased during times of physiologic stress, including infections. And that's a wrap. Let's see what you learned about adrenal insufficiency today. First, can you define adrenal insufficiency? Adrenal insufficiency is an inability of the adrenal glands to produce enough adrenal steroids to meet the metabolic demands of the body. By definition, this means a deficiency in cortisol, but in many cases, this also means a deficiency in aldosterone. Symptoms common to all forms of adrenal insufficiency include weakness, fatigue, depression, weight loss, nausea, and muscle aches. Second, can you explain the difference between primary and secondary adrenal insufficiency, and list two clinical features that present only in primary adrenal insufficiency? Primary adrenal insufficiency is caused by dysfunction of the adrenal glands, and secondary adrenal insufficiency is caused by insufficient pituitary secretion of ACTH. Primary adrenal insufficiency has two features that distinguish it from secondary adrenal insufficiency: hyperpigmentation and an increased prevalence of the symptoms of aldosterone deficiency, like orthostatic presyncope, hyperkalemia, and hyponatremia. Third, can you name one cause of primary AI, one cause of secondary AI, and state the most common cause overall? Primary adrenal insufficiency is caused by autoimmune adrenal destruction, infection, and pharmacologic suppression. Secondary adrenal insufficiency is caused by the same things that normally cause injury to other parts of the brain, like head trauma, tumors, and infarction. The most common cause of adrenal insufficiency, though, is the abrupt withdrawal of glucocorticoid drugs without tapering the dose. Finally, can you outline the diagnostic workup that allows you to make a presumptive diagnosis of primary or secondary adrenal insufficiency? The diagnosis of adrenal insufficiency should first be established by measuring an early morning serum cortisol concentration. Next, a plasma ACTH concentration and an ACTH stimulation test can help distinguish between primary and secondary adrenal insufficiency. Patients with primary AI will have a high serum ACTH and less than 25% increase in cortisol secondary to ACTH stimulation. Patients with secondary AI will have low serum ACTH, but the response to ACTH stimulation will vary depending on the chronicity of the disease. Now, armed with your newfound knowledge, let's get back to that patient from the beginning of the episode. A 44-year-old female presents to your office with fatigue and weight loss and an odd darkening of the skin of her mouth and gums. What pathology does her clinical presentation suggest? And how would you go about establishing that diagnosis definitively? Fatigue and weight loss are pretty common, but the darkening in the mouth and gums more specifically suggests primary adrenal insufficiency. Sure enough, when you review her routine labs, you see that her sodium levels are slightly lower than normal, and her potassium levels are slightly higher than normal. Nothing to worry about on their own, but in the context of hyperpigmentation, they support your hypothesis. You ask the patient to get another blood draw early in the morning, and the following week, you tell her that her morning serum cortisol levels are low, and her serum ACTH levels are high. You've made the presumptive diagnosis of primary adrenal insufficiency, or Addison's disease, and can begin treating your patient with supplementary glucocorticoids. But you'll need a CT scan and a few more lab tests to find out why she developed this problem in the first place. And that's our show. If you like what you heard, make sure to like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Remember, your feedback helps us improve. You can enjoy the full Brix experience online at www.usmle-rx.com, complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, and active learning. So go check that out if you haven't already. Until next time, friends.